Welcome to episode 2 of Goodnight Sweetcast. My name's Philip Sharman and I'm joined by Chris Wallace.
Hello.
And we're here for a second week, for a second look at the second episode of season 1 of Goodnight Sweetheart.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we've made a terrible mistake just yet.
I don't think so either. I was really pleased with the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we did good. The sound quality was a little bit off, so I apologise for that. We were playing about with some new equipment and it didn't go as well as we wanted, so we've gone back to the old equipment that we use on WikiShuffle, our other podcast. Hopefully we sound a little clearer this week and a little less echoey and muffled like we did last week. Playing in this week, you'll notice a slightly different version of Goodnight Sweetheart, the tune that you'll have come to love if you play the DVD, because it makes you listen to it about 15 times every time you navigate between a menu.
It does. Oh, God, it does.
What we've discovered is there are an awful lot of different versions recorded of the tune Goodnight Sweetheart. There's actually enough out there that we can play you a different version every single week. One thing we didn't state at the beginning of last week's podcast that we probably should have done is that this is a completely unofficial podcast. We don't have the rights to any of Goodnight Sweetheart.
We have no rights.
And that we're doing this out of love. And hopefully people who own the copyright for Goodnight Sweetheart will appreciate that we mean them no harm. We come in peace. The version of Goodnight Sweetheart that we got this week was by Heinz Sandauer, an Austrian composer who worked on the film scores of 20 films between 1936 and 1958, including Two Happy People and Arena of Death. Lounge version that we got there, quite laid back.
That's why I liked it. I picked it this week because I liked the cover, because people were just chilling in 60s houses and smooth.
Good night, sweetheart, then.
Let's do it. Time tunnel.
It takes ages to get down the time tunnel this week because there's some problems at home.
When is there not problems at home for Mr. Sparrow?
Mm.
He came home from shopping. This is how they open the episode. He came home from shopping. His groceries were a bag of loose kidneys, a couple of war CDs, and a book about air raids. That was the extent of his shopping. No wonder she was pissed off.
There was a jar of salad cream as well. Did you miss salad cream?
I missed the salad cream. I was focusing on the bag of loose kidneys.
Who doesn't like salad cream with their kidneys?
Yeah.
So Gary's appeared in the family kitchen with supper, and he likes doing the cooking because he's a new man. Something's given him the idea that he wants kidneys.
As I thought everyone has all the time. Oh, I really fancy kidneys. No one says that.
We're only on to episode 2, and already there is a pretty consistent pattern of us just listing ways in which Gary Sparrow is a terrible human being.
Well, it's hard to avoid it. In fact, this is the first episode probably of many. He does not say one fact in this entire episode, I don't think. I think he lies consistently throughout, even about little things. He can't tell the truth. Ever. It's pathological. This isn't right.
We open up in the kitchen and Gary Sparrow, our erstwhile hero, is chatting with future wife Yvonne. Not as in wife, he's not married yet, but wife from the future, by which I mean 1993.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is confusing.
Yeah.
Present day wife, by which I mean the past, by which I mean 1993. It's tricky, isn't it?
It is a bit hard to follow.
1993 wife.
Why don't we say this podcast, we'll set this podcast in 1993. If you're listening to this, we all have to pretend we're in 1993 for this reason, so we don't have to do the past twice. We are, in fact, just in 1993, looking backwards, but with a bit of foresight into what people are like in the future.
So when we're talking about 2016, we're talking about it as if it's in the future?
Yes.
I think you might be making things more rather than less complicated, but I'm happy to play along. Let's see how this pans out. You, the listener, needs to play along with this, though.
You are in 1993.
I expect none of you to be listening with in-ear headphones, because they weren't around yet, preferably on a Walkman of some description.
Foamy headphones.
Big foamy
headphones. Not cool foamy headphones, the ones that are really cheap.
Strung together by a very feeble piece of metal.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the kitchen.
In the kitchen.
We brought the shopping home.
Kidneys in a bag.
That Yvonne doesn't even like kidneys. Hasn't occurred to you, Gary. Mm-hmm. Your wife doesn't like kidneys. That's why you've never had them.
Well, to be fair to Gary on this occasion, I couldn't tell you if any of my girlfriends from the past have liked kidneys. Never asked it. It's never came up. Maybe they loved kidneys. Maybe they didn't really feel anything about them.
It's not something I imagine many people put on a Tinder profile.
No, it's probably not.
I mean, you'd have to really love kidneys to put them on your Tinder profile. At that point, you've got a bit of a kidney problem, maybe.
Yeah, you don't want those people. Swipe away.
It turns out that Mr. Sparrow is going for a job interview for a promotion at work.
Yep, the TV shop man. High position in, what is it called? Bungalows? Bungalows? Is that a real thing?
Rumbelows. Rumbelows was a real thing.
No, I thought that was made up.
There was Rumbelows and there was radio rentals.
Retail in the United Kingdom that once rivaled Currys, Dixons and Comet. And they called it Rumbelows.
Well, we can rest assured that Rumbelows is not going to feature throughout the entirety of the run of Goodnight Sweetheart because it went defunct in 1995. He's going on a job interview, and so professional HR manager Yvonne is trying to give him some guidance about how to perform as best as possible in this interview.
She seems to be quite high up.
She makes a rather classist remark about how she doesn't deal with people in boiler suits.
She does. She has sex with them.
What's the ideal thing to do in that scenario when the woman you've married is giving you some useful advice that might be of help for you because she has some expertise?
You should listen. That's probably the first thing you should do.
Maybe acknowledge her as a human being and accept that she might have some insight.
And that.
What does Gary Sparrow do?
The opposite.
Poo-poos.
He does.
But he poo-poos the perfectly sensible advice. And this isn't outlandish advice. Mm-mm. This is wear a suit to your interview.
Pretty good advice. Definitely would make a difference in getting a higher up position in any job. Gives the employer a feeling that you're going to bring something to the role.
He's rejected the advice. Mm-hmm. And to use Gary Sparrow's own words, he's going to rely on his innate charisma to get the job.
Yeah, I'm not too sold on his charisma.
No.
His arrogance. Well, no, arrogance maybe is a good thing in a job interview.
So they've had their dinner. He's been put off the idea of kidneys.
Mm.
And they end up having an omelette instead. And then after dinner was finished, he retires to the living room and puts on the radio. And there is a radio phone-in about spooky goings-on, we think.
Just oddballs. Oddball characters.
Gary decides that he's going to have a go at this. And so,
why did he do that?
It was a very visible plot device. Gran and Marks, in the audio commentary for the episode, did touch upon this, and it's a very good point, that the way that people consumed TV was very different in 1993. If you'd missed a first episode, that was it, you'd missed it. And so the necessity to recap in the second episode is a lot more than you would expect to see today. So there was kind of a duty of care to people joining the series late. They needed a device for recapping what had happened, and the radio phone-in's as good a device as any, and it allowed a little bit of Ghost in the Machine to appear, because also listening to this radio phone-in where Gary, who won't confide in his own wife, will confide in a radio disc jockey in the fact that he'd been through a portal and ended up in 1940. Mm-hmm. And who should be listening?
It'll be Ron.
Ron's having a listen.
And he's driving in his car from his painting.
He's been to a painting class.
Yeah.
No reason. There were no jokes out the back of that. He was just dressed in a painty smock.
He was listening in his car, and he must have immediately swerved around and drove to Gary's house. He was so desperate to find out whether or not he was pretending to be Angelo Garibaldi.
Yeah, that's the false name that he gave. Angelo Garibaldi.
At the door, unexpected, which is a bit rude. I don't like that. I wouldn't do that.
But in the time before mobile phones...
Jesus, how do people cope?
I don't know. I don't know how they coped. How they cope... We might have to abandon this whole pretending we're in 1993 bit. We're not very good at it.
No, it's hard.
So Ron's been to his art classes in his smock, and he's listened to and immediately recognised Gary's voice, and he's on to him.
You can tell because he's got that cheeky look on his face.
Yeah. Given that they only met in the last episode, we're going to have to kind of forgive that and pretend that that never happened. Yeah. They need to be old friends for this to make any sort of sense.
In my head, I do this sometimes with programmes where I make up the breast. So you know how sometimes people get a bit annoyed about something on TV? I just pretend it didn't happen. So it's in my head, they're childhood friends. Yeah, Andy knows him well enough to realise Gary lies a lot. And he would lie about something like that for no reason.
Ron wants to believe. He wants this to be true. He's willing it into existence. And his perseverance will pay off. But not this episode, because that's all we get to see of Ron. So it's the next day. And he has, as he said, he was going to, worn his jeans and best sweatshirt. That was his best sweatshirt. We saw it. That was straight after the interview. He was wearing that sweatshirt tucked into his jeans.
Yeah.
Now, I always tuck in my shirt. Even if I'm wearing a T-shirt, I will tuck in the T-shirt. Now, I appreciate that's a little unusual and not everyone follows that particular rule.
I don't particularly follow it. That's fine.
But, and I understand that most people might not tuck in their shirt/T-shirt. That's fine. I would never, under any circumstance, tuck in a sweatshirt. That's just weird.
That is weird.
Why had he tucked in his sweatshirt?
What are you trying to draw attention to? Is it the belt? Were belts big?
It was kind of swimming in all that jean material.
Yeah, and then the rugby shirts themselves, they tend, because of all the patterns, they tend to draw the eye to the centre like a target.
So this was plain. This wasn't his favourite rugby shirt.
Oh, right. I'm getting confused about the difference between rugby shirts and shirts.
Yeah, no, this was a sweatshirt.
Sweatshirt.
So this was a jumper, effectively. He tucked in a jumper. It certainly you wouldn't wear it to a job interview. That's a bad decision there. The interview has gone badly.
Mm-hmm.
As it would do for somebody wearing such a terrible sweatshirt jean combo. And I must imagine it's quite difficult to mask the fact that you think you are the world's greatest human being in an interview scenario. That's having true. Conducted a number of interviews, you can generally tell with a few well-chosen questions if the person you're dealing with is a megalomaniac. Rather than apologising to Yvonne, who was clearly right, because they said in as many words in the interview that he should have been wearing a suit, didn't apologise for that and didn't say, thanks, sorry, I didn't listen to you. Just gets a bit huffy about it.
Yep, and his excuse for not wearing a suit when he was asked was that the cat threw up on it. Not the best excuse.
He hasn't got enough self-awareness to really understand how the interview went, so he is relying upon his wife to tell him, which is a bit of an unfair position to put her in. Yvonne refuses to say anything about the job and says she doesn't know, she hasn't heard anything, and that, of course, she'd tell him if she did. She then phones up Stella.
Stella!
Stella!
Hello, Stella.
Listen, I'm going to go down the off-license and get some more beers, all right?
OK. No, it's been a horrible week. Well, Gary's interview today. No, he never bought a suit in the end. No, he didn't get it. But I can't tell him that, can I? I'm sworn to secrecy. I feel terrible for him. I thought you'd gone.
I forgot my wallet.
Can I call you back, Stella?
Why did you lie to me?
I'm sorry. I wasn't supposed to know. I just overheard Mr. Watt talking. How could I tell you?
How could you not tell me? You're my wife.
But my contract of employment!
What about your bloody marriage contract?
Gary, where are you going?
I'm gonna buy a suit.
It's not as if she was saying, that idiot can't even get a promotion, what a loser. Mm. She was saying, I feel really bad, I don't know how to tell him, put me in a horrible situation. A sympathetic person would say, yeah, that is a bit of a shame, I'm sorry. Gary, who's forgotten his wallet and come back and overheard, is not pleased that his wife has lied to him.
Which is funny for what he's attempting to do.
She's done the worst thing in the world. He is so angry, he can't be around.
Proper huff.
He really just storms off like a moody child. I can kind of relate to his reaction next. Because when you feel like you've been hard done by, well, I'm going to do the thing you want me to do anyway then, and I'm going to do it better and I'm going to show you. And so he decides to go off and buy a suit. He doesn't need a suit anymore. The time for having a suit is gone. Now is the time for talking with your wife.
Yeah.
But no, well, if you think a suit's going to make everything better, I'm going to go get a fucking suit then. It's clearly what he was thinking. So he goes and he has a look in the shop at the suits. The suit he looks at.
Pretty special.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
I'm a bit worried, though, that my idea of what looks good, because of the amount I'm watching this, I'm going to lose my mind when it comes to what people look like. Because I've seen so many awful clothes now. That suit is one of them.
Yeah, this suit that he looks at, it's beige. It's the purest of beiges, and it comes accompanied with the most disgusting 90s paisley tie you ever saw in your life. It is everything that was wrong with 90s fashion just distilled. He kind of looked at him and he did that thing where you look in the mirror and you can see your own reflection against the mirror.
Yeah.
So he could see what he would look like in it. And what
smooth.
He looked like was a bell end.
Yeah.
Because it was such a horrible suit.
Mm-hmm.
It was so horrible. So thankfully, his mind wanders, though. He could see him realising, well, this isn't actually going to teach her anything at all because he wants to teach her some sort of lesson for the terrible things she's done.
But most normal people, even if they got to that level, you probably would have went home and like, I'm sorry, I get it.
Yeah.
I overreacted.
This is the point where you start talking yourself down from that anger.
I was just disappointed, but I understand where you were coming from. You didn't want to hurt my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I didn't buy that suit. Instead, I bought kidneys. Two bags of kidneys. Gary would do that because he'd already forgotten what his wife said yesterday. The kidneys will be back.
Yeah. I made your kidneys. They're your favourite.
He said something yesterday. I don't know. But no, he doesn't do that. He goes further down his anger and thinks, because he sees a bric-a-brac. He sees a sign that they're doing a charity sale shop. And he thinks, what would be even more vengeful? Rather than getting this suit, I get my outfit for adultery. My adultery costume.
What about, instead of discussing things with my wife, I move to a reality plane where she doesn't exist? How about that as an alternative?
Yeah.
How about I erase her from existence?
Yeah, that's really, pretty helpful thing to do.
That's harsh. That's in some ways more harsh than just going out and having an affair. I'm going to have an affair in a world that you're not even in. The implication, although it was never said, the implication was that he was going to let Duckett's passage lie and move on. It was just a fleeting thing. And the implication from the writers, certainly in the commentary, was that that's their achievement. But he was reading up on the war, and he was obviously getting a bit obsessed by the whole concept of the time. But whether he was actually going to act upon that and do something more, that wasn't really clear at that stage.
But knowing the character, it would have only took something like that for him to break.
And it did. He was looking for the excuse. He found the excuse. It was delivered to him on a platter of his own engineering, because he could have tried at that job interview better. He'd engineered this entire upset, and now he can feel like he's got a reason, a justification for going back and trying to find Phoebe.
Maybe in the back of his mind, he's so fed up of the 90s anyway at this point that he's sabotaging his own self subconsciously to give himself, I can't stay here. If he was one step more insane, he would have killed Yvonne by now. Said, I can't stay here. Not only does she not exist where I want to go, she doesn't exist here. The perfect crime.
One of the rules we've set ourselves in the podcast is that we won't spoiler beyond the episode we're talking about. But there is an episode in the final season that explores that notion brilliantly by putting an extra layer on top. And I'm really looking forward to the time we get to talk about that one.
In about a year.
In about a year. Hold this thought about Gary's desire to escape, and we'll discuss it again in probably 12 months' time. Good God, what are we doing with our lives?
I don't know.
Dressing up. He's found the bric-a-brac store. He's going to get himself some 40s garb, and then he's got no reason to not go back.
Exactly. He'll fit in. Yep. He won't look out of place in the 40s. He'll have his correct uniform, which he didn't have in the 90s. But he will have it in the 40s.
I'd not picked up on that parallel. Yeah, he'd got it so wrong in the 90s, but he's going to get it so right in the 40s.
It's a second chance. What a lucky man that he gets to have two chances.
And be a Boring in both of them.
Yeah.
So this bric-a-brac shop sells all kinds of 40s clothes and
all
knick-knacks.
Kinds of garbage.
There's some wonderful extra acting. Scene. There's clearly been the direction. If you can just pick that up and have a look at it and put it back down again.
Yeah.
And just mumble around and not really do anything.
Just walk into shot, pick up a hat, look at the top, look under it, put it down, then leave.
There's one stall holder in particular that's taken a bit of a shine to Gary. Dirty old woman.
Oh, yeah.
That's creepy, wasn't it? Yeah.
There's that brilliant bit when he comes out, because he's obviously, they have to do that thing where they look in the mirror and show him posing. Plinky plonky children's music over the top. Gary's theme.
Gary's theme's going on.
Yeah. A good bit at the beginning of it, it sounds a bit like Toto, like Africa.
It does.
Dun, 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 dun. That one. You get a bit of that. And then all of a sudden, very jarringly, it just goes. Gary's theme is odd.
From the beginning here, having watched all the way to the end, and I couldn't remember Gary's theme. I'm guessing that it's abandoned later on in the show. If you want Gary to come out and do some work for you, if you need him to fix your video, you can get hold of him on 07 1431 1560.
Oh.
Well, you can't because the codes for London have changed now.
Oh, so what does that ring?
Well, I was hoping we might find out.
Shall we?
Let's give it a try.
Okay. What if it's someone scary?
It's not anyone scary. What are they going to do? They're going to be on the phone.
Who's Nicholas Lindhurst? Doesn't exist, does it?
No.
No.
Nothing. It's not a real number. Well, that's disappointing. We don't get to have a chat with Gary.
No, that is a shame.
Would have been good if it had worked, though, wouldn't it?
Nicholas Lindhurst and character was waiting for that day.
I'll be honest with you, it's the only idea I had for a feature for this particular episode.
Let's work on this feature.
I think this feature might be done, actually.
Do you think?
I mean, if somebody had answered, I'd be up for phoning them every week. I don't know how they'd have felt about that.
Jesus, like, this is again. This guy keeps ringing me asking me about Nicholas Lindhurst.
But it didn't work. So never mind, we'll move on. We'll right. Power on. And he's about to go up Duckett's Passage. There's been a lot of time passed before our first trip.
Uncharacteristically for this programme, did you notice in Gary's house, in their living room, once you look past the sea of like blue, there's blue sofas, blue walls, blue carpets, blue everything, they've got some sort of weird pyramid ornaments in the background.
Mm.
They look very very sci-fi. Maybe that's the reason for Gary's time-travelling powers.
Totems.
I don't know what went on in the 90s. Rumbelows was a thing.
So back in time we go, back to the pub. Now, about a week or so has passed since he last went to the pub.
Yep.
And he just strolls in, expecting everybody to be elated to see him.
Of course, as Gary would, he walks into every room and expects that all eyes are drawn to him. And now he's got his suit on. There's no ladies in that pub, it's just that man that says his catchphrase.
Ladies present.
What's that little box he's got around his neck?
Is it his gas mask?
Does that do the siren? Is he a portable siren?
Oh, you might be onto something there. He might have a portable siren. Yeah, given where it's positioned, that would make sense. If anyone can help, please do. Communicate with us. We would love to hear from you. Tell us what's that. See, we're in the pub. We're asking Phoebe out for a dance.
And her dad is there, and her dad says, quite clearly, she's a married woman. And even now, you could say, at any situation, right now, if you saw two people talking to each other that you were friends with, one of them was married, you would say, she is married.
That would be a legitimate
Gary,
thing
she
to
is
say.
Married. Are you nuts? But no, they don't, neither of them care. It's like, leave it, Dad.
Yeah.
That's quite a good impression.
It was very good.
That's where it came from.
Yeah, we're not talking about some antiquated version of marriage where the man owns the woman.
Mm.
We're talking about the version of marriage where it's not generally okay to go around shagging Gary Sparrow.
No.
That's just not what marriage is about.
No, just because it's Gary doesn't mean it's fine. It doesn't. I'd even understand more if it was an affair where they, like, it was a sudden thing, a sudden chemical thing, where he did it all of a sudden, and then they felt like, oh, we can't do this, we can't carry this on, we're both married. Oh, I'm not married now, I'm married in the past, or the future, whatever. It's confusing. But we can't do this. And maybe eventually they would get back together again, and that's how affairs start. That's how it normally happens. Affairs don't normally start by walking up to a married woman and asking her for a dance.
When their dad stood right next to them, especially.
Oh, Dad.
Oh, Dad.
He's being reasonable.
Yeah, Dad. Stop being so reasonable. Just want to go and have a dance.
Fine. You make your bet.
Yeah.
Phoebe.
I'm 25. The age is not the factor here that matters, Gary.
The way he says it, though. He says it like, how old are you?
You can do what you want, actually. At 25, you can make your own rules.
In front of a dad, and a dad is like, Gary, she's my daughter. It's been a week. You've come here with three bananas, asking, using them for my wife, my daughter's hand in marriage. Yeah. She's already married.
You're trying to buy my daughter for bananas.
Yes, I am.
Obviously, they're very impressed by the bananas. They've not seen bananas for a while. No. There is a brilliant piece, possibly my favourite bit. Mm-hmm. It's not joke of the week.
No.
We'll get to joke of the week later.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit been set up where these bananas, Gary to shut up Eric the dad, says, have a banana, and shoves a banana into his pinny. It's quite playful, it's quite funny, it's quite nice.
Yeah.
But when you've watched an episode three times like we have, you notice a bit more about what's going on with the movement of the actors.
Yeah.
And you see the moment just before it's about to be delivered, this line, where Eric sort of prepares himself and pushes his chest forward, ready to accept the banana.
Yeah.
It's legitimate to think of people of war-fighting age. Why aren't you in the war? He's probably got relatives who are the same age who are out there risking life and limb fighting in this war. So to be a little bit peeved at the people who aren't doing that, that's a legitimate thing to be concerned about. Yeah. And I'm not saying that I would be the first to enlist on the outbreak of war.
But even if you're not, this person, if it's your daughter that he's talking to, your interest in their background suddenly becomes more of an issue. I would be very interested if my daughter kept getting, let's at the minute say, harassed.
You don't want your daughter getting off with a spiv. I understand.
Exactly.
Nobody wants that for their imaginary daughter.
No.
Don't want my daughter getting off with a spiv.
And she's worth much more than three bananas.
Yeah, it's early days in the war as well. It's not as if they'd been 6 years without a banana. They'd have had one a couple of months ago. They'd probably eaten a banana as recently as I have.
That's true.
But the argument has been won. Gary will be taking her for a dance.
Yes.
And off we trot to the dance hall.
Yeah, where Gary does his dancing. Arm waving, shuffles his feet, looking around. Because maybe he's in character, he's pretending he's a spy. He's looking for the exits. Or maybe he's looking for some more women.
Maybe that's
He just
it.
Gathers them all up. Gathers all these 40s lonely women up and sees how many he can fit in his big coat.
He does some awkward dancing because he doesn't understand what dancing is in 1940.
They do it different in America.
For all the research he's been doing, he hasn't understood the very basic fact that people don't dance as if they're listening to Rick Astley in 1940. There is a brilliant bit when the first song finishes after he explains that he can't dance. The first song comes to an end and everybody that's doing the dancing, they all applaud the band because it's a live band that are playing here.
Yeah.
Gary assumes that they're applauding him. This is default position. There's some applause. That little bit of dancing I did earlier must have been for that. I can't see how it could be for anything else. I'm in a room.
Exactly.
There's applause.
I know,
who else is it going to be for?
I know, I'm cool. I know. And then when Phoebe inquires about his dancing, he says, he'll only do the slow ones. He can do the slow ones. To Phoebe, though, she don't mind. I think, though, she has a moment of like, oh, but I do have a husband. This whole episode makes me sympathetic to her. Married women, maybe they do get a bit lonely when the husband is away for so long. And if they weren't happy to begin with, and it's unusual to see a man. So Gary's really in his element because he is hot stuff.
Cock of the hoop.
Yep, you can see Phoebe she's swooning. But I'm sympathetic to her, not in the same way I am with Gary, because Gary is doing it the minute he's doing it because he's pissed off with his actual wife, who we know he loves. We do know somewhere in his brain, he doesn't hate this woman. He did marry her.
And he says so at every opportunity. You know, he doesn't at any point feel as though he is begrudgingly desperate to get out of the relationship.
No. He tries really hard to keep that going. He just wants multiple wives.
So he had to explain why he couldn't do the dancing. Rather than go small, he went big by the most audacious lie possible, by saying they'd broken both of his legs in the Indianapolis 500. And all the time you have to remember that the reason he is here is because he was annoyed at Yvonne for telling a lie to him. So he has a very dim view of lying.
Oh, yeah.
Even when it's done to protect the feelings or maintain a professional relationship, or for all the right reasons, lying is unequivocally unacceptable. Unless it's him, in which case, the bigger the whopper, the better.
Yeah. If you're the sort of person that lies a lot, you should have a balance in your head of how many lies you can keep on the go. You don't want too many big ones. You just want a couple, maybe one medium one, and then small ones to support the big one. Don't keep building up the big one.
There's another weaselly thing that he does, which is a massive lie, in that she says, aren't you married, or something along those lines, and he says, there's nobody alive who I could marry. Or something like that. So he engineers it, so he's not lying, but he so clearly is, and he's so engineered it, and he's patting himself on the back for being so clever. That's worse than just lying about it.
That is, yeah.
Multi-layered deceit that he can then come back in the future saying, I told the truth. Actually, if you look at what I actually said, if you read the small print, you'll find out, actually, I didn't do anything wrong, actually.
There are other times where he tries to justify the things that they're doing. So it's almost like his mind's got this little section of it where it's like, you have to somehow be able to explain to Ron how this isn't evil. How you can somehow morally adjust this so you keep Ron on board because you need him. You need him probably more than these women. You need Ron.
I don't know that he knows that yet.
He doesn't know that yet, but...
At the moment, there's just some lying abandon. Everything's consequenceless at the moment. Which is a horrible way to start a relationship, to just con your way in there.
That's how people do it these days.
By these days, do you mean 1993?
1993.
We're winning Phoebe round.
Pretty easily.
With the dancing and charm. Because he is fairly charming. Let's not, you know, it's not as if he's
can
some big
do charm. He can do charm.
Cock. He's got a bit of charisma about him, and he is quite warm, and he's not a prick.
And she genuinely likes him for some reason. Well, we learned why is all those pheromones that he keeps spurting out of his neck.
The theory's holding up.
It is,
into the
it?
Second week.
All of the dance hall was unconscious. That's the noise it makes.
So off we go back to the pub from where they've been doing their dancing.
Walking back to the pub. Been a lovely evening.
He moves in for a kiss.
The feeling's right. The mood is set. Launches.
But then the door opens. And who should it be?
The swinging fists of Phoebe's husband.
Uh-oh. Guess who's back from Africa? And who's coming a punch in?
Still, you did all right on the slow numbers. No, Gary, it wouldn't be fair on Donald.
Just an affectionate goodnight kiss.
Yeah, but you know where they lead. I mean, I'm young, I'm healthy, I've got needs and passions. It'd be so easy to give in to them.
Wouldn't it?
After all, you're talented, interesting, well-travelled. But I've got this. So, all right, maybe Donald is quiet, shy, gentle, wouldn't say boo to a goose. Maybe he doesn't have your way with words. But he's still my husband.
What the bloody hell do you think you're doing with my wife?
Yeah, arms are swinging. What did he say? Get off my wife! Or something. What was his words? That's my wife. Don't touch her.
She's my wife.
Words to those effects.
Get off my wife.
Yeah. Oh, no. That's the usual thing you see on a Saturday.
Kiss it out, bunch of fives. Lamp. I will lamp you.
That's exactly what happened.
Schmeck.
Yep.
Cue obligatory cabbage cutting sound effect.
No.
Is that Foley work.
I know Foley work.
But you know how they make the noise of a punch?
That's what it is.
They chop a cabbage in half.
Oh, I can't even...
So when you get that kind of squelchy punch noise that punches don't really make, that traditionally was made by chopping a cabbage in half.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah. It works, because now if you see somebody get punched and it make a punching noise, which is basically nothing at all, it feels weird and you want the cabbage noise back on top of it. But he gets lamped anyway, and he's on the floor.
Phoebe doesn't even have time to help him up. He's dragged back in, door slammed.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you'd do if you were on leave is maybe let the person know that you're on your way. That's an option.
Mm.
That would have been available to him.
A nice surprise.
It would have been.
Well, we don't want a nice surprise. And also, maybe he thought, I want to find out if Phoebe is faithful.
Everything about a character suggests that it might not be that difficult.
They have pretty much said that there's something off about their marriage. They haven't went into details about what it is yet, but it's not a good one. Not one that they're happy with. You just didn't want to go out dancing with a Gary. I'd hate for my girlfriend to cheat on me with someone called Gary. Imagine how bad that would be.
Specifically a Gary.
If it was like Julio, I think, oh, wow. It's called
inevitable.
Julio.
It was going to happen.
Yeah. So I've been trying to avoid Julios for ages, but what are you going to do? But if she came home after work something one day and said, I've got something to tell you.
Yeah, you know
out.
Malcolm from work.
You're not...
Yeah. Malcolm?
Malcolm in the...
Don't do a Malcolm.
Malcolm in accounts. Yeah, I know Malcolm in accounts. I'm moving out. I'm leaving you. And then you just have to tell all your friends, yeah, she's left me for Malcolm. And then they'll say, Malcolm in accounts?
I feel a bit awkward doing this bit, being called Philip. It seems like I could, that could, you could, what, Philip?
No, Philip Schofield.
Philip from HR.
Yeah, Philip Schofield. He's cool.
So he goes limping off back to 1993, back to the present day.
Tail between his legs.
Tail between his legs. Got a shiner, bit of a shiner. Of course, what's the best way of explaining this shiner to your wife? Probably an elaborate lie. I'd go for an elaborate lie, wouldn't you?
Yeah, easiest way to do it, I find.
Best way.
I've been lying my entire life, apparently, so...
Why stop now?
Mm-mm.
But it's tinged with a bit of truth, which is always going to make a lie more difficult to sustain, because you've got to remember which bits you made up and which bits were outright bullshit. He'd been back to the theme pub that he'd told her that he couldn't remember where it was because she expressed an interest in going with him.
I'd already think he was having an affair. There's a location you can't come to, but I really like going, and now I'm coming back with punches in the face. It's either that or he's joined a fight club. But she immediately, when she sees his wounds, goes back to pity, affection, and Gary gets to get his leg over, which he loves.
And it does prompt our
joke of the week.
I love you, Gary.
Despite my crap dress sense.
I prefer you without your clothes on, actually. Oh, come on, Gary. Let's go and do what you do best.
Yvonne, I'm not putting up a satellite dish at this time of night.
There we are. We've set up episode 2, where we've established a little bit more. It looks as though Gary's going ahead with this.
Oh, Gary in his mind has already decided what he's going to do.
Still, at this point, he needs to provide a specific justification in his mind for every trip.
Yes.
That's what will change as time goes on. I hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Hopefully the audio quality is a bit better this week.
Mm-hmm.
We want from you submissions for the Garrulery.
The Garrulery.
We've not had anything in yet, but it's early days. The first episode's only been up
masterpieces
for a little
take
while.
Time.
Absolutely. You need to find your inner voice, decide what you want your masterpiece to say.
As always, eroticism is optional.
Always. As with everything in life, eroticism is optional.
Yeah.
That statement is not true. Please, draw us a picture, paint us a painting, write us a poem.
Oh, a poem would be nice.
A poem, we'd love a poem.
But
we would definitely read out any poems that we received. Mm. You can send them to us in physical form, like the olden days, by sending them to Wikishuffle HQ, 1B Headlands, Kettering, NN157ER. That address is on our website, goodnightsweetcast.com. There will be show notes going up for every episode as well, and we will share any artwork that we receive there as well. We are working on our own artwork. That's coming imminently, but we would really love it if you can contribute as well. Oh, I know what we haven't talked about. We are recording this episode on Friday evening, on the 2nd of September, 2016. And you know what's significant about that date?
It's the date when Goodnight Sweetheart comes back onto our screens.
It does. So in less than an hour from where we're recording, we are going to be watching the new episode.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to be talking about that for about a year and a half. So put that out of your mind.
Forget
about that. The great thing about technology now is that you will be able to watch it in the future. So don't worry about it now. Watch it with us. Follow along. And in about a year's time, we will reach episode 59.
It's going to bookend it quite nicely, unless something tragic happens.
Anything else that you want to get in touch with us about would be fantastic. We're getting quite a following on Twitter now, which is great. If you enjoy the podcast and you're interested to know what we're going to say next, then please share with your friends, write us reviews in places, and just let a few more people know about who we are and what we're doing. That would be just lovely. You would make us very happy. Thanks for listening. We will see you again next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodnight Sweetcast is a Wikishuffle podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter at GNScast, or find out more at goodnightsweetcast.com.